Podo. You're listening to The Election Tricycle with Tom Hamilton, Emily Tamkin and Rohan Venkat.
Hello and welcome to The Election Tricycle, a show about the elections that are going on in the UK, the USA and India in 2024. We talk about the connections and differences between them and the ways in which our different countries are conducting the great business of democracy this year. Before we get started properly, I need to tell you that you can now subscribe to a premium version of this podcast with bonus content by going to tricycle.hubwave.net. That's tricycle.hubwave.net for an additional bonus but paid subscription to our podcast. Now, this week, I am Tom Hamilton. I'm based in London. I'm joined by Rohan Venkat, who is normally based in Cairo, despite being our India correspondent, but this week is in Philadelphia in the United States. So he's doubling as our US correspondent. I'm not joined this week by Emily Tamkin, who normally joins us from Washington, D.C., but is on vacation this week, so she won't be with us. So this week, we have a special guest, and I'm going to ask Rohan to introduce him.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I'm in Philadelphia for the next 6 weeks, and even though I'm further away from India than I usually am in Cairo, it actually feels a bit closer given that there's a lot more Indian folks here and expertise on India and so on. But yes, we have a special guest on our episode this week. I'm very pleased to welcome Yashraj Sharma to the podcast. Welcome, Yashraj.
Thank you, Rohan. Glad to be here.
Yash is a freelance journalist in Delhi and has been covering a number of things in connection with the elections this year. We wanted to bring Yash on to talk about one specific aspect of these upcoming elections, and that's the place that social media and some elements of technology are playing in this election. Yashraj did a couple of stories for a number of different outlets, a piece in the online publication called Rest of World, focusing on why YouTube is going to be a major player in these elections as opposed to Facebook in the past and other social media outlets. He's also done reporting for Wired magazine on influencers and their role in Indian elections, and work for Al Jazeera on the use of AI in the elections. And hopefully we'll get into some of these things. But I wanted to start off on YouTube. The piece was that 2024 elections will be a YouTube election. And I know the reporters don't always get the say on what the headline will be, but is 2024 going to be a YouTube election for India? And if so, why, Yash?
Yes, so primarily it looks like that because as compared to earlier, right now, in a lifetime, we can see that the election is playing out on YouTube and in multiple different ways, like from broadcast, how people are consuming the content around election, how people are consuming the news around elections, as well as how politicians are reaching out to voters in terms of outreach and even during the campaign. And I mean, there are multiple factors behind that. Perhaps the most important one is the sheer user base of YouTube. That is more than 467 million users right now in India, which is far ahead than any other. Like the closest second is Facebook with 314 million. And it's also about the reach of YouTube. Who are the people who are consuming content on YouTube? Unlike, I would say, Instagram, you would see the content reach of YouTube is much more wider because of multiple aspects, including the multilingual content and languages available on the platform itself. And other than that, because of course, the data rates have gone way cheaper since 2016, when the whole data was sort of revolutionized in India with cheaper rates. So the accessibility has increased a lot, and people, including political parties, are more increasingly using different facets of YouTube.
So when we say it's a YouTube election, do we mean political parties just giving speeches and putting advertisements and saying things on them? Do we mean that there's a lot of political content on YouTube? Like, give us a bit of the flavor of what it actually means to have a YouTube election.
Look at it like a complete ecosystem. You have political parties putting millions of rupees into the ads to reach people via sponsored ads. You have political parties paying influencers to be on their channel. You have ministers and leading political figures who are going up for the Lok Sabha, sitting in podcasts not necessarily like this, but generally podcasts, you have these political parties sort of investing in infrastructure to just amp up their production on YouTube. See, there's another thing that we need to understand, that people who are in power, the politicians who are in power, are using it a bit differently, and the opposition is using it a bit differently. There's also a distinction in there. So opposition parties, if you look at like biggest opposition, Indian National Congress, have said in past 1 or 2 years that on multiple occasions that they prefer to speak to YouTube influencers instead of mainstream journalists that they say have been compromised, basically to avoid misrepresentation in media. If you look at Bharat Jodo Yatra, the walk by Rahul Gandhi across India, which sort of positioned him as a people's leader, that was the idea behind the campaign. And the campaign insiders have told me that the entire thing, YouTube was at the foundation of it.
So just for context for our listeners, the Bharat Jodo Yatra was an effort, I think about 2 months over last year, where Rahul Gandhi was walking through a big stretch, a huge distance over India, and using that as a rolling campaign to get awareness for the Congress. And along the way, as Yash has reported on, they chose not to interface with, you know, the mainstream press in India, the broadcast particularly, because they're seen as broadly towing the government line, and instead chose to give interviews and walk alongside influencers, you know, some big ones and some smaller ones based on those specific localities.
There are multiple categories of influencers as well. There are some influencers who are like millions of followers out there on YouTube or including as on other platforms as well. But primarily, if you look at YouTube, there are people out there with millions of subscribers. Their role is different. Their application is different. Rather than a sort of a local influencer, that let's say Rahul Gandhi is walking through a village in Madhya Pradesh and a local influencer, a local YouTube channel joins him from there. It's a different approach. Even the politicians accepting to walk with that YouTuber has a different context to it, because local YouTubers have a crazy grasp over the local population there. They wield that much influence, they wield that much power over the local population. While at the same time, if you look at the politicians sitting with the sort of, you know, big influencers and big podcast channels like those, their application is different and mostly used for a much more wider outreach.
I was really interested in what's the overall balance of how the different parties are benefiting from YouTube. You talked about obviously a Congress related initiative just then, but overall, in terms of the amount of resource that the different parties have, is this something that ultimately BJP is just getting more YouTube content and more people to see its content than other parties? Or does it help to slightly even the balance between the biggest party and the other contenders?
I mean, if we look at the parameters on how we see that they are reaching out to people, if we start with looking at how many people are BJP reaching, and if we look at the numbers that are available on their political transparency page reports, they would shock anyone. If you look at past 3 months, from 1st January to, let's say, 30th of March, these 3 months, BJP has invested nearly 382 million rupees just on YouTube political advertising. They were the first one among the major national parties to launch the campaign officially. And they acquired YouTube, just follow me with the number. The second highest is Central Bureau of Communication, that is government putting out ads, which is again propagating the ruling government's line. They have invested 323 million. So by combined, it goes over 700 million rupees. Do you know what is the closest second?
No, go on.
It's a private consulting firm which is working for a party in the southern India, and they have invested 66 million rupees.
Yeah. The numbers are really staggering. And what I'll flag, you know, again for listeners, is that these are the, let's say, transparent numbers. That's just the advertising side of things. Right. A lot of this work with the influencers, I mean, we do know you've reported on the fact that the BJP set out and, like, you know, they're not just going and meeting these influencers. These are folks being paid for. They're going to agencies that book these folks all over the country. And none of that ends up in the transparency reports because it doesn't need to be identified in quite the same way. So we don't even know the scale of this necessarily.
I mean, the scale actually is unimaginable for me sometimes, because if you look, as I said earlier, you know, it's a complete ecosystem. Things are happening everywhere and everything is correlated somehow. Like you look at the major podcast people that minister sat with. They are awarded the National Creators Award by Prime Minister himself in a first of its kind award show in India, where they were sort of officially endorsed by my government, if I'm not wrong. It's an ecosystem that is connected from everywhere. As you said very rightly, that these are just the official numbers that these people are paying from their own pockets. Just to put ads, a lot of content that is out, that is going out there, we never end up knowing that it was paid for. And there is no way of knowing that. The YouTube asks creator to mention that it's a paid partnership. Indian Election Commission has asked influencers to repeatedly flag or at least mention that it's a hashtag partnership, hashtag paid content or hashtag sponsored. But as I have seen in my reporting and I have spoken with these influencers, none of them really mention or carry these sort of disclaimers.
There's some reporting on looking at it from the other side, which is that while it's true that many of them are not revealing these connections, there is a danger to the influencers that people realize these are not authentic interactions, that these are paid for. And it's a tricky balance for some of them to do it without losing their, you know, the trust that the audience has in them. So could you tell us about that a little bit?
I mean, it's a very thin line if you look at it. I mean, it's a two-faced sword, I would say. Campaigning for a political party or campaigning especially for the ruling government, and this is also a place where ruling government has an edge of, ahead of the other parties, because there are certain incentives that are included when you are working with the ruling government or when you are putting out content for the ruling government. You walk with the minister, you have a line with the minister, and that's a big flex. I mean, come on, it's a huge flex to have that, you know, you have that connection with them, and it also brings sort of credibility to you. I mean, Prime Minister is handing you an award. It doesn't get bigger than that in Indian society. If you look at our society, it may not get bigger than that, that Prime Minister and that Narendra Modi stature right now has given you an award. So that brings a heap of credibility to you. But at the same time, if you look at the smaller influencers, let's say an influencer that I spoke with for the Wyatt story, he was based in Chhattisgarh. And he says that whenever he puts out content, or let's say a story that when he asked that, you know, I support this guy and you should go out and vote for this guy. There are people always, his followers coming back to him that, you know, we do not follow you for this, because you need to understand that these influencers who get in trouble for these things are the influencers who are not necessarily out there talking about politics. They are your lifestyle influencers. There are, you know, do-it-yourself influencers. They are not necessarily very political out there. And that is also where the place where it's most effective, because that is the place, that is a neutral place. Campaigns are going after these people because they believe that this is the most influential thing that they can do.
It's all about performing authenticity, you know, in a sense. It's giving people a sense that this is real. And as Tom points out, that it may seem like the democratized internet would allow a smaller opposition to be able to leverage a more level playing field. But those numbers that you mentioned just show that's the imbalance is huge. Maybe if I shift us to another element of your reportage here very briefly, you've also covered other use of social media technology, and in this case, AI and deepfakes. Can you tell us a little bit of what we're already seeing in India in terms of the use of AI in the campaign?
So, first of all, there are multiple applications of AI in India right now, starting from resurrecting dead leaders, popular dead leaders, and making them give speeches. They are personalized audio messages on WhatsApp, and sometimes they are really creepy and they may creep you out. And there are video translations for basically multilingual outreach, speeches being translated into a southern state language, which is not possible the other way around and causes a linguistic barrier. They are able to jump that. And I mean, there are use of holograms in the campaigns. But on the darker side of it, on not so innovative side of it, lies the deepfakes and basically deceiving voters. And Deepfakes are currently used in two applications. First, promoting yourself, and other is dragging your opponent through the mud, basically, and maligning them, or either just leveraging yourself above the other one.
What does that mean? Like, can you give us an example of how that works? You mentioned in one case, like, it's very easy to make them sound like they're asking for bribes, basically, and that's a way of saying, okay, my opponent is corrupt.
What a lot of political consultants and political observers from the hinterland India have told me is that, you know, when a voice recording of, let's say, chief minister of a state goes viral and it's a deepfake, it makes to the news. But a lot of that is already happening on the constituency level, more sort of district level, where it do not even make it to the news, national news. It may, you know, just flutter around in the smaller WhatsApp circles. And it's just audios, tampered audios claiming that a person is, you know, threatening someone, or a person is offering, a candidate is offering bribe, or a candidate is involved with some mafia sort of dealings to basically malign the candidate a lot of times. And again, you know, they come in and they go out and they become part of this rumor circle. And before a lot of times, before the party can, you know, the candidate can kick back, sometimes it's just late because the, you know, the rumor mill, it's just very quick.
And can I ask if the victims of this, do they have any legal recourse, or is it just a question of having to go out there and say this is a fake? I mean, what's the reputational damage both to the people who are being faked, but also is there any damage to the people who are doing it?
Right now, Indian laws do not define deepfake. I mean, there is no sort of definition or laws for deepfakes. So what tech policy lawyers have told me during the reporting is that these cases can be tried out for defamation. These cases can be tried out for outraging modesty if it is in that context, if sort of, you know.
Sure.
So it depends upon the application of the deepfake, you know, what is the nature of the deepfake. But the Indian, it has been reported in the national media that the government is coming up with a sort of a more detailed version of policing the content right now.
I was just going to ask, is there any evidence that any of that is coming from political parties themselves, or is it sort of independent actors who are just trying to cause problems?
A lot of time, deepfakes do not end up on the official channels because they are outrightly ethical and people know that. So
sure.
The first place where deepfakes go viral are the WhatsApp groups, you know, that are operated by the workers or the supporters of the party. And that's how it starts going viral. And then it lands up on the platforms like YouTube, Twitter, or, you know, Facebook, Instagram. It basically starts from WhatsApp. That is the platform where they put it at first. But sometimes, as I mentioned in one of the stories, that sometimes they end up on the official channel, like it happened in Karnataka. On the morning of polling, just a few hours before the polling was about to begin, Congress's official channel published a 7-second deepfake of opposition's minister calling people to just go out and vote for Congress in opposition of his own party. And the video was, I mean, it spread like wildfire. And if we look at it, if you have the political understanding, you would know that, you know, okay, this is deepfake. But when you look at it with context of digital literacy in India, it's a very shady area, and it's not going good. As a former election commissioner of India told me regarding this, that, you know, even if one voter is made to believe that it was true, even if one voter is swayed by that, the election integrity has been compromised. And now you need to understand that it has been amplified thousands of times.
Yash's reporting includes super interesting details of not just what we see on the outside, but folks who actually do this for people, their entire organizations or groups or individuals who like claim to be the one to go to for doing deepfakes. And many of those could be like positive deepfakes in the sense of transferring languages from one to another, or just, you know, you're being able to amplify things. I was really flabbergasted by this one anecdote that shows up in one of the reports, in which apparently a call comes in asking someone to make a deepfake video because the actual video was more compromising. Could you tell us a little bit about this story?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I was speaking with this small AI solutions company based in Rajasthan, who has been gaining prominence because of its work with some political parties in the past. And as you said, for the right reasons, more innovative reasons in there. But I did ask him that, you know, you must be getting unethical requests all the time. And he says that, yeah, it's like all the time. They come via Instagram, anonymous messages, or via Telegram, and mostly via the other people. And then he did say that one day this very weird, a request just weirded him out about his own, you know, nature of his own work. It was a constituency from southern Rajasthan that stood out to him. It was just ahead of the elections in November, and the caller was requesting to alter an authentic video, you know, an authentic problematic video that they knew had landed in the hands of the opposition, the political opposition. And they wanted him to make sort of a shallow fake of that and make a low-res deepfake, which they planned to spread faster than the opposition so that they could say that, oh, this was a deepfake that opposition, you know, shared. So, yeah, it's weird.
I mean, yeah, if the listener hasn't understood, basically, there is a they knew this video was out there that was compromising. And so they wanted to put out a faked video that would be that would seem above board to make it seem as if the compromising video was the technical manipulation by the opponents. I really wonder what this is going to lead us all to in terms of whether the public at large will eventually be desensitized to this stuff and that we just won't have much trust in what is coming through to us. But in the interim, while we get to that space, you know, there's potential for tremendous meddling. And very hard to track, you know, at the national level, it's possible, but at that constituency level where it's a switch of 10,000 votes, 5,000 votes here and there, the potential is tremendous. Tom?
I'm just going to say I'm very interested in this because this is something that there's been a lot of interest in the UK as a potential threat, obviously, because it's a threat everywhere because the technology now exists. But there haven't really been any instances of it. There was one quite famous case last year where what purported to be an audio recording of Keir Starmer, the Labour leader, shouting abuse at some of his staff went viral, and then it was quickly shown to be fake. And also one of the quite important factors there was that there were a lot of Conservative politicians who made a point of saying, this is a fake, please don't share it, this is not the way that we want politics to be done. So there are sort of, I'm not saying that there is not a risk in the future, because I think there may very well be, but there are institutional checks and balances in the UK and sort of reputational checks and balances that mean that I don't think any political party is going to be sharing or manufacturing or sharing deepfake material anytime soon, because the reputational damage to them would be enormous. The source of what little material appears to have come out so far in the UK is sort of smaller far-right activists, largely, whose motivations are a bit different. But none of the main parties are going anywhere near it. And I'm really interested that this is clearly a live problem in Indian politics in a way that it hasn't yet become one in the UK.
I just wanted to quickly flag that a lot of times when I spoke with political consultants here and even the parties, it has sort of been accepted as a norm. It is being accepted as a norm that, yeah, this is a dirty thing that happens, but even I'm doing it and even you are doing it. So everybody is doing it right now. And it is very dangerously becoming a part of, you know, just a new norm. But at the same time, there is a very sort of new innovative approach. And I am aware that the campaign of a jailed leader currently is planning to come up, you know, is planning to come up with sort of an Imran Khan campaign, by how he used AI in the recent Pakistan election campaign. And a jailed leader currently, a popular jail leader, is their campaign is considering coming out with a similar approach in the upcoming general election. So yeah, it's going to go wild. It's going to get even dirtier and innovative at the same time.
And one of the ways it could play out in places like the UK and in the US, where both enforcement is different, is that it could be foreign influence operations. You know, it's not necessarily internal. And I think that's as much of a danger, although in a big insular election like India's, just what's happening domestically alone is both setting the standard and giving the template for elections around the world. And I think it'll be deeply interesting for us to follow, including in seeing how authorities attempt to address this. But I think that takes us to the end of our main segment. I just wanted to give you a chance. Yash, tell us where people can find your work, how people can find you.
I mean, that Twitter is the best place. I mean, it may not be the best place anymore, but I'm most accessible there.
We'll certainly have to come back to the subject, to see how things actually go. Thank you so much for joining us, Yash. This has been fascinating. That's it for the regular section of the Election Tricycle, but we do have a premium segment for listeners who either subscribe to our Substacks or who can also sign up by going to tricycle.hubwave.net. Thank you for listening. And for those who are premium subscribers, stick around.
The Election Tricycle is a Poddo podcast hosted by Tom Hamilton, Emily Tamkin and Rohan Venkat. It is series produced by Nick Hilton. Tweet us at Tricycle2024 and watch a video version of the show at cooler.news. For sales and advertising, please email nick@poddopods.com. podopods.com.